Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Scott Horowitz, who's the president of the Southampton Town Trustees, and who's been a trustee. How long have you been a trustee?
11 years.
And I guess has been letting the ponds and all the rest of it, where we've had that situation.
Yeah.
Describe why we do that and which ponds you let. I know about in East Hampton, I know about Georgica and
we let Sagaponic and we let Mecox. And
what does let mean?
We open it up. We basically will open up the cuts to the ocean so that we can, in Sagaponic, we can let the water out because they start to suffer with problems in the upland when Sagaponic gets too high. Mecox is a bit more complex and dynamic. The Mecox Bay watershed has a lot of filtering bivalves in there. There's a lot of shellfish, recreational and commercial harvested shellfish, and it greatly affects all the homes that are, around Mecox Bay and all the farms, because when the water table rises, it affects the farmers' fields, and it affects greatly the watershed, because you have enterococcus trends increasing, you have salinity decreasing, and you have, harmful algal blooms that occur. And it's a delicate balancing act that goes on with Mecox, and it gets tricky.
How often do you do it? I want to be clear to people who are unaware of this, that what happens is the rain comes down, waters flow into the ponds raise their heights, and eventually begin to overflow into areas that would normally, I guess, be swampland, except humans beginning maybe 400 years ago changed that and started digging trenches to the ocean to make the water out.
Yeah, basically it's been going on for hundreds of years. And with the, the development that's gone on and all the inflows from the upland, whether it be from runoff or from the septic systems, it has an adverse effect on the watershed on the Mecox Bay. And you've got all kinds of shellfish in there. And, you have to balance that out. Now, we have a management plan where we hit certain triggers that we know when it reaches a certain height, there's a placard down there that we have to get moving on opening it. And we have to watch for the proper wind conditions and the proper sea conditions for the opening to be successful, because you're trying to manipulate Mother Nature, and she doesn't like to be manipulated. She wants you to obey her. She doesn't like to be commanded to do anything. So it is delicate. You can't just, run it like you're running a train. You have to look at all the other factors that, cause that. Now, earlier on in the season, we had a substantial amount of rain, which caused us to have to open it April and May, which is tricky because you also have to contend with the nesting birds there that are threatened and endangered species. Now, here we are at the tail end of the season, and after the season, it's been kind of dry. We did just open it up not too long ago, so we're in good shape. But it's a delicate balancing act, and it has to be handled very carefully, and it's very important.
Particularly in the summer, a lot of people show up when the dredges and the machinery come out to move the sand out of the way so the water can roar out, and they go into the pond in tubes, sitting on tubes, and rush out through the cut into the ocean. It's really quite something. The cut usually is about once every 4 or 5 months and less.
Maybe. It usually is, unless you have unusual rain events that, that create us a situation where you're going to trigger an opening. I mean, you're basically correct unless something occurs that, you know, warrants us to get in there and do that. And we also try and do a long dredge once a year so that we can clear out sand that builds up on the delta further into Mekox and put that sand back out on the beach and back into the littoral system where it can protect, you know, the barrier beach. So we try and keep it so that it runs nice and straight and it doesn't take any curves or turns. And we do that by maintaining a nice channel so that we can get a good flow back and forth, because not only do you want it to go out, but you want it to recharge. You want to see the dissolved oxygen increase, and you want to see the salinity levels increase to healthier numbers. And you just want to see a little back and forth. Generally, within a 3 to 4 week period of time, it will close itself up naturally, and it'll start the process all over again.
And the cut's usually what, about 200 yards between the pond and the ocean?
It's usually around that amount, somewhere in that zone. Usually, yeah. Sometimes it's easier than others to open. Lately, the cut openings have been quite successful. We had a period of time prior to engaging in the long dredge where they weren't very successful. We were waiting on permits from the state, DEC, and everybody else. It took us like 6 years to get a 5-year permit, but once we adopted a management plan and kind of got that, you know, resolved, now we've been running more regularly and been more successful with our openings. What still jams us up from time to time are the birds. And no government entity is exempt from respecting federal law. And we're still trying to gain additional permits and authorizations for, you know, everyone to work more reasonably with us, because you're basically balancing two, you know, environmental issues, and you can't let one trump the other. And we feel confident based on the manner by which we handle the threatened and endangered species program that we can protect the birds and protect the environment at the same time from a boots on the ground perspective. I think that the trustees have demonstrated they have the ability to do that, and they should give us that authority so that we can be even more efficient in the summer months.
As I recall from the history books, this has been going on since this town was settled about 1650, 1660. When the time came to do the cut, I think they required all able-bodied men to come down there to do it and use shovels and stuff. And they had fines and punishments if you didn't show up. That was the way I remember it.
I would concur. And we did try and do this the old-fashioned way a couple of years ago, and you could research that in the local papers, because there was one nest that was in too close a proximity for all the other regulatory authorities to be comfortable with us bringing a machine there. Even though we felt we could bring a smaller machine, we could come in from the east, we could protect that nest, they weren't comfortable, but they did let us try and do it by hand, and we tried to do it the old-fashioned way. And unfortunately, that bird nest was predated that morning by a seagull, but we still tried. And it got to be about 3 o'clock, and I wanted to declare an emergency. And people said, "Scott, what kind of emergency?" I said, "A medical emergency. Somebody's gonna have a heart attack here. It's a lot tougher than it seems." But we, myself and James Duryea, my environmental analyst, we were there, and we actually got water, and I think Dana Shaw from Southampton Press was there at the same time. We got water to run for about 30 seconds, and then it all caved in on itself. It's that you can't do that, you know.
When was this?
That was a couple of years ago. It was a couple of years ago. It was a boiling hot day, and we tried it. And I guess if we had 100 more people there, we could have been successful. With the crew we had, we really tried all day. A lot of volunteers came down. People came, we had volunteers, and we tried and tried. And on the same day, somebody had their boat washed up just west of Shinnecock Inlet. They had a mechanical failure, and the boat ended up washing up on the beach. So we were dealing with the boat washed up on the beach. At the same time, we're trying to hand dig Mekox. You can't make this stuff up. Welcome to the town of Southampton, you know.
Well, the trustees are an ancient body. They were created in Describe it. It was about 1685.
1686, we were the oldest elected board in North America. The trustees used to own everything, and it sold off to the town and sold off to the villages. And at this point in time, we're still in place to be a system of checks and balances. And, you know, my hat's off to, you know, King James II and everybody else that, you know, set these colonial era patents in place, you know, to protect us for what we do from the highest point of the dune, what they call the crest of the dune, to the high tide mark on the ocean beach throughout the entire township, you know, from town line to town line, including through the villages, so that the trustees can maintain, you know, public access for the people. I mean, they're here to be on the beaches. You know, it's the economic engine of our community, the waterways and the beaches. All the underwater lands are owned by the trustees. And believe it or not, some of the roads are still owned by the trustees, and they're major roads now with the influx of people. You have these things that used to be little trails for, you know, getting carriages through or moving livestock through. And now there are million-dollar homes on these roads owned by the trustees. And we try and do the best we can with providing the services in a very limited budget. Public safety is always very important to all of us. So we do the best we can, but we're a historical board with a tremendous amount of responsibility. I believe we're protecting the heart and soul of the town of Southampton, things that really affect our quality of life. And we do the best we can.
What is some of, briefly, tell me some of the other things that the trustees do more specifically.
Well, the trustees, more specifically, we own all the shellfish in the town, and commercial maritime heritage in our community is very important, and so is recreationally. And, you know, we've partnered up with Stony Brook, Southampton, and we partnered up with Cornell and other organizations to make sanctuaries throughout our town so that we could have filtering of the water for good water quality, and at the same time, have a sustainable shellfish harvest. Everybody likes to go clamming. Everybody likes their clam chowder and baked clams. And, you know, you got to have respect for the commercial baymen that are out there. And, you know, we own and regulate and control all of that. And that's a delicate balancing act for things that need to be done here. You know, we take care of the navigation aids throughout the entire township. And, you know, we're administering that threatened and endangered species program. And like I said, we are regulating those roads that we still own. We also manage one of the biggest waterfowl programs that there is in the state. You'll see all the duck blinds throughout. That's a tradition that's gone on in this town also for a very, very long time. And we want people to, you know, hang on to that heritage and tradition, but we also want it to be safe. So we also regulate that. And it's a very important role these days. Being a trustee, and that was why I think it was so important for us to get on sound financial ground with the latest success that the trustees have had.
About that in a minute or two, but how did it come about that there were no financial means to fund the trustees?
You know, that's an excellent question, and my whole time that I've served on the Board of Trustees, and I served 4 years prior on the Environment Division, working on the Conservation Board, I asked that same question. This is so important, yet basically the finances for the trustees that came from the general fund were basically like a handshake backroom deal. And in my tenure sitting there over 11 years, I had to deal with people wanting to take away the finances of the trustees, take away the land from the trustees, and take public access and drastically change it or eliminate for, you know, people that really want to do what they do on the beach. Three lawsuits that we had to contend with. Two of them are resolved, and one is, you know, still ongoing, but almost resolved, hopefully, for the benefit of everybody in a shared resource. And when you're protecting and defending things that affect our quality of life, you should be able to do that on sound financial ground. And that's what, you know, I worked hard on with this board and with prior boards to achieve.
Why weren't the trustees on financial?
I think they're based on just based on what I've seen and what I articulated, I think there are certain people that just didn't want the trustees on solid ground because it's a wrestle over control, over who controls what. And I think that, you know, the trustees are in place to protect the freeholders and commonality of the town of Southampton. Everybody needs protection to be able to utilize these waterways and go and enjoy those beaches, even if you live in the village. Most people don't live directly on the coast. They live inland and they need those protections so that they can enjoy these traditional and historical uses as opposed to just going to a regular beach.
Up until now, how have the modest funding obtained? Was it spaghetti dinners and things?
Well, the trustees generate trust revenue from issuing permits, 4x4 permits and various building permits for docks and things that are on the trustees' property. And money came and services were provided by the general fund, housing, you know, offices and salaries and information technology services and other services, inspection of our docks, and also enforcement, because we rely on the town to enforce our rules and regulations. But nothing was codified, nothing was memorialized, and things were a constant change. And it shouldn't be that way. If you're protecting something as important as this, natural resources, public access, first of all, it should be on sound financial ground. Secondly, it should be transparent to the taxpayer to know that, you know, $2 of their tax bill is going for the trustees so that they can defend public access and they can do what's necessary to keep shellfish in the town or waterways navigable or whatever it is that we're engaging in. That should be transparent and it should be on sound ground. That way everybody can make better decisions and they could have the knowledge to know what is actually going into this endeavor. That's what we've finally been able to accomplish. That works best for everybody.
When did this happen? And let's start with that.
Well, this happened.
What is it that happened?
What happened was we were able to get legislation passed through the state assembly that was championed by Fred Thiel, who's, you know, in his last term as state assemblyman. And my hat's off to Fred because he's crossing the finish line after a very long and distinguished career with, you know, having the ability to quarterback getting this board on sound financial ground. So we've got a bill that Fred had put forth. Ken LaValle actually sponsored it in the Senate, and later Senator Palumbo continued to carry that ball for the trustees to be able to submit a budget to the town. And then the trustees become a district. So anybody in the town can look at their tax bill and go, oh, trustees, they're getting X number of dollars out of my tax money. And now there's what's called a memorandum of agreement between the town and the trustees so that it's clearly defined what services the town is going to provide and what's the value of those services so that the taxpayer knows that this is the amount of money that's coming out of their general fund tax revenue that's going to the trustees to do the work that they have to do. You have transparency and then you have stability for the trustees so that with our trust revenue, we could make better decisions on taking on debt service to fix ramps that need repair in the town or fix piers that need to be repaired in the town. So now you have the stability to understand exactly how it's coming in and you know what services that you're going to have without people's ability to say, well, we're not providing that service for you anymore. You'll have to go figure out how you're going to do that. That doesn't work for the people of the town of Southampton. You need these things memorialized. You need these things stable and you need to have transparency. So it's a win-win for everybody. And it's a shame. It took this long to get it done, but that's government. Sometimes it moves at a glacial pace. And my hat's off to all the elected officials that even when it got difficult, they stayed true to what needed to be done to do the best job they could for the people of the town. And I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of everybody that was involved.
What are some of the other towns on Long Island that have trustees like?
Southold and East Hampton.
And are they going to be affected by this too?
I don't believe so. This was specific legislation that we requested and we worked on. You know, they may have different relationships with their town board. We're not all exactly the same. But from our perspective, what we needed to get done was we needed to be on sound financial ground, and the public certainly deserved transparency. And that's what we have achieved.
Have you spoken to any of the trustees from the other towns?
We have, or in earlier times, we have done that. And perhaps we will have a joint session moving forward. But this has been a very public discussion. And I don't want to say public battle, but certainly a public discussion over the last decade that I've served on this board. I've been talking about trying to do this. It was actually supposed to happen last January, but got delayed by the last town board. They actually got a resolution through the legislature to delay it till January 25, which I disagreed with. You can publicly see that. I just didn't understand why, you know, why it is that you want to deny the people of the town from transparency and financial stability for protecting natural resources. That just didn't make sense. And thankfully that this current town board, you know, agreed with that as well and saw that the merit in, hey, that makes a lot of sense. And we all came together and we got this done for the greater good. And in my opinion, this will have positive effects for the environment and for the future generations, because future trustee boards are not going to have to go through the same struggles. It should be a mutually respectful relationship between, you know, all the regulatory authorities, all the boards in the town, and the trustee board. The public expects us to work together for the greater good. And that's my message. And that's what we need to do.
Just to be clear to anyone listening to this, if it's budget neutral, it means it doesn't affect the total, because it will no longer be on the line of general, whatever it was.
General fund, it'll just be on its own line. Yes, so you'll see it broken out that way on its own line. I mean, tax, you know, I think the towns are taking tax increases throughout the island because of the costs of a lot of things that are going up. This has nothing to do with that. This just has to do with the statement of the facts of what the value of those services were and codifying that for the trustees. And if you're codifying it for the trustees, you're codifying that for all the freeholders and commonality of this town. And I think that's what people deserve.
Yes, and thank you for being on the podcast. We've come to the end of the time. One last question. Which fish did you enjoy catching the most?
Thank you. I tell you, I enjoy all types of fishing. Anytime I can get out on the boat, the swordfish is an awesome fish to catch. Tuna fish, great. And the marlin, you know, always a great fish to catch. I don't have a favorite. I enjoy them all.
Thank you for being on this program.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you. My pleasure.